In digital preservation, we often talk about this like indefinite, you know, forever, eternity. I mean, there is no indefinite. There is no infinite. Nothing lasts forever. You know, even a Picasso. Everything will fall apart someday. It's, of course, feasible to think of, you know, when we look at things like DNA storage and these other forms of like very, very long-term storage, that like, yeah, sure, you can encode digital information and probably have it last a very, 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 very long time. That's very different from thinking of an artwork, because an artwork is much more than a collection of files.
This is Library Bytegeist, a collection of audio stories from the libraries, archives, and museums of New York City. I'm Molly Schwartz, and this podcast is brought to you by the Metropolitan New York Library Council, where the libraries and archives of New York come together to learn, share ideas, and collaborate. Time-based media art is inherently unstable. That means that audio, software, video, slide, and film-based artworks will decay and grow obsolete as quickly as the technologies used to create and exhibit them, often making them impossible to access within a matter of years. So what does that mean for someone whose job it is to preserve these artworks? How do museums with huge, valuable collections of time-based media art prevent against the corrupting influence of time? This is a core challenge in the work of Ben Finoradin, a media conservator at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, where they have been collecting time-based media art since the 1970s. We sat down last week to discuss how he approaches his work and what it means to be a media conservator today.
So I'm an associate media conservator, and in the Department of Conservation, I specialize in the preservation and care and conservation of media-based artworks in our collection. Our collection today includes early single-channel analog video works, many, many works from that era, but also extending into multi-channel installation, more complex kind of sculptural objects, installation artworks that involve robotics, custom software, interactive software, really you name it. We recently collected the original set of emoji, video games, but also, you know, for example, our Department of Painting and Sculpture have a work on view right now that is, it's an installation work and it involves robotics and video and slides and custom software. So it's something that extends across the entire collection throughout the institution. I originally trained as an artist, which is not very uncommon for somebody in my field, but I happened to have a day job at the time in an archive, and I found that I really liked it. You know, just sort of, I think it's the kind of zen of cataloging. I just found that I was kind of naturally drawn to that. So the role of a time-based media conservator, in a lot of ways, is being the steward of the variability of a work and understanding how to manage layers of acceptable change. And, you know, these are all ideas that, like, I'm not just making up, you know. These are ideas that a lot of key thinkers in the field have established over the course of the last few decades, and Pip Lawrenson being really one of the critical ones in thinking about the conservator as this kind of manager of change. The core skill set of media conservation is something that a lot of people in New York are thinking about right now. So if I were to try and boil it down, which is very difficult, you know, in a couple of sentences, there's of course the baseline art history, conservation ethics, and understanding of the history of conservation, and all of that as a foundation. But then a fundamental understanding of audiovisual technologies, how analog video works, how digital video works, how computers work, all at base levels. Really, all conservation is collaborative in terms of working with experts and technicians, but with media conservation, it's even more so. because, I mean, just think about the landscape of technology and how infinitely complex it is, or infinitely diffuse. You know, there's just so many things, and you can't be an expert in all of them. Very few of them, in fact. So that's incredibly important. And in fact, just today I was meeting with an expert in supercomputers about a supercomputer we're going to be restoring. So that's something I could never hope to learn myself. In my role at MoMA, I wouldn't say that, you know, what we do necessarily influences the creative act. Like, I hope it doesn't. I really do. I think that artists shouldn't have to think about that. They shouldn't have to be thinking, well, is this going to last forever?
Just to backtrack and provide a bit of background, time-based is a term used to describe artwork created with media that, quite simply, can be measured by its duration. For example, a video artwork that is 5 minutes long. Time is one of its dimensions, like a painting has a width and a height. In my discussion with Ben, I was surprised to learn that MoMA is one of the oldest cultural heritage institutions to start collecting film. They have collected over 1,600 works of video art, on formats ranging from 2-inch quadruplex reels to U-matic tapes to thousands of VHS tapes to digital beta cams to DVDs, among others. Since Ben deals with old and obsolete media, I figured I would ask him what old media he is most nostalgic for. It turns out, he takes John Hodgman's view on the concept of nostalgia, that nostalgia is the most toxic impulse.
I don't really like the word nostalgia, because it, I think, implies a certain, like, shallow fondness of old things past.
But it turns out that Ben does have a favorite old medium.
My favorite old technology, my old favorite old medium, is definitely, hands down, Laserdisc. I mean, for so many reasons. You know, first of all, it's a giant record-sized optical disc. So first and foremost, that's super cool. But then secondly is the fact that it's not digital. And a lot of people don't know this. But if you look closely at a Laserdisc, you notice that there is something, there's kind of these, you know, concentric etchings in the disc that you kind of have to, you know, tilt it in the light to see it well, but it doesn't look, you know, mathematical and rigid and perfect. It looks, almost like a record. And it's also, Laserdisc holds a very important place in the history of media art because it was the first real random access format where artists could suddenly, A, synchronize multiple channels of video accurately, but also have video works that were perhaps interactive. And that was revolutionary. A work that's on view right now by Teiji Furuhashi, who was a Japanese media artist working in the mid to late 80s and early 90s until he sadly passed away of AIDS in 1995. So this is a work that recently underwent a major restoration, and digitizing the Laserdisc was part of that process. But it's a great example where it's an installation-based work where there are these nude figures that roam the perimeter of this dark black room with this glossy white floor. It's very theatrical, and they kind of run around the room, and they walk in slow motion, and they embrace each other, and they embrace nothing. And one of the figures, if you cross his path, he stops in his tracks, and he turns and he looks at you. And so just that simple act, that simple interaction, before Laserdisc was something that you really couldn't do. There might be some kind of hacky way you could pull it off with tape, but I would challenge somebody to show me an example of that. So yeah, it's definitely my favorite obsolete format. I mean, it's just physically beautiful. It, you know, ushered in technical capabilities that were incredibly important for artists. And yeah, it's just pretty to look at.
Sometimes feats in media conservation make the news, like when Corey Archangel and the Carnegie Mellon Computer Club recovered Andy Warhol's digital paintings that he created on his Amiga 1000 personal computer using Graphicraft software from 1980s-era unlabeled floppy disks. Whether in the news or behind the scenes, it is the task of media conservators, like Ben, to manage changes over time in a way that stays true to the artist's original intent, and to make it possible for others, like us, to continue to enjoy and learn from these artworks as far as possible into the future. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Library Bitegeist.